Welcome to the NABC Guardians of the Game podcast, where we go inside what makes a coach a coach.
I was very fortunate to be with Coach Katie. He could get so much out of the guys. He was tough on them, but they loved him because he cared about them.
The Guardians of the Game podcast is a production of the National Association of Basketball Coaches and IMG and is brought to you by Wilson Sporting Goods. And now your host, Coach Dave Odom.
Welcome to the second season and the second podcast of the NABC Guardians of the Game. Today's guest is the great head coach of the Kansas State Wildcats, Bruce Weber. Bruce, welcome to the podcast.
Morning, Dave. Thank you.
Listen, let me catch our listeners up on Bruce Weber, who he is, a little bit. Man, what a resume you've got. I mean, you're going into this season, which is, I think, your 20th year as a head coach. You've won 438 games presently, 235 losses. You've been at stops like Purdue, Southern Illinois, now Kansas State. You did some graduate assistantship a little bit earlier on. You've won multiple championships at each of those stops, topped by certainly the 2005 season when you went to the Final Four with the Illini, just one step away from the national championship there. But I got a bone to pick with you, Bruce. I mean, you knocked my son out last year. I mean, come on. UMBC, it was a miracle season for them, and you guys just wouldn't let it go any further.
It was a tough game, actually, and he should be so proud of his team and to do what he did to beat, you know, the number one seed first time as a 16, and then to come back and play against us. They had toughness. They had guard play. We had to play our butts off to even find a way to win. So unbelievable season for them, and you should be proud. I know you were there cheering.
Well, I was. I was cheering as hard as I could internally, and I would have to tell you, and of course, you got kids, so you know kind of how that is, but I've been in a lot of tight situations from a basketball coaching standpoint, but none like that. I mean, you know, you sit there and watch, and there's very little you can do except close your eyes and just hope that the next shot goes in, and sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't, or you know, you're sitting there and things are not going well. And, you know, I'm saying in my own mind, change defenses, something, you know. again, there's not much you can do. It's just whether you make shots or not. But you had a great run. Your team certainly deserved to win that basketball game and to move on and go forward. And you were just, you know, another shot or two short of the Final Four again. So congratulations to you and your team from last year.
Thank you. Yeah, and, you know, you talk about making shots. Your UMBC sure did make a bunch of shots against Virginia. I know Tony Bennett, that's been hard for him to deal with all summer. I had a chance to talk with him. But we, you know, the one thing we did was we defended. And against UMBC, against Kentucky, against Creighton, our kids really stepped up. And, you know, we were missing – probably our best player, Dean Wade, last year. He's the preseason player of the year in the Big 12. And our guys dealt with that adversity. And I challenged him. I said, be the best defensive team in the tournament, and we would have a chance to win. And if you look at the numbers, we actually were the best defensive team in the tournament, and including the game against UMBC, where, you know, it was just kind of a gut check. Their guys played so hard, and there were those guards put great pressure on and never let you do anything. And, you know, it was a hard-fought win, that's for sure.
Well, you know, speaking of last year's team, you did finish one game short of the Final Four. How has that experience carried over and motivated perhaps this year's team?
Well, I even said the year before, we had some issues in our program a few years ago, and we kind of let some guys go and started over with this group of their seniors now, but they were freshmen. And then 2 years ago, we were able to get into the NCAA tournament. We were in that last four in or whatever, but we were just happy to be in there. And we ended up beating Wake Forest, your old team, and Danny Manning had a good group that year, and we ended up, we moved on to Sacramento and played Cincinnati. But that experience is so valuable. You know, they got a taste of it, and once you get that taste of it, you want more. And it came back. They came back and worked very hard. We made a lot of progress. 125 last year, even with injuries. And then, you know, when we got into the tournament, you know, I always tell them anything can happen. If you got your mindset right and you're playing for the team, I've been through it, a lot of things can happen. And we had the good fortune of doing that. And, you know, now does it motivate our guys even more? And that's what, you know, we'll see this season. We got everybody back. Right now we're healthy. I hope that stays the case. And, you know, the big thing, though, is we have to play as a team. We got to share the basketball and continue to do the things we do well, in that, including playing good defense.
Well, Bruce, you know, there are a lot of ways to coach, philosophies that, you know, coaches around the country embrace. One of them is this one-and-done deal. And I've never thought of Bruce Weber as being one of the coaches that leans that heavily on the one-and-done proposition. So my question to you is, do you believe that experience, that is 2 or 3 years players that, you know, players that have been in your program for 2 or 3 years and have gained the experience of playing in a very, very good conference, the Big 12 is just terrific conference. I mean, it really is. Does the experience that you gain from year to year, does that play into that, given the fact that you're not looking at a lot of one and done type players?
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt, Dave. But the you know, just look at the Final Four teams last year. They all had experience. They all had older guys that had been through the wars, and that's why they were successful. And you know, including Villanova, Jalen Brunson was the player of the year in the nation, and you know, an experienced guy that had played a bunch of basketball and ended up getting drafted. And you know, they had experienced guys. Kansas had experienced guys. Michigan, Loyola, all of them had experienced guys. So that, I think it makes a difference. And I really think it makes a difference for developing into an NBA player. I had the good fortune, guys like, you know, Darren Williams and you know, Coach Glenn Robinson at Purdue. And they left early, but they left when they were ready. And that experience, not only the basketball part, but, you know, going to college and maturing and growing up, it's so valuable once they get to the NBA. And the thing I talk about all the time, it's one thing to get to the NBA, and it's hard enough. It's what 1% of college seniors do that. But it's can you stay? And can you stay in the league? And that's, you know, that's what it really comes down to. You know, this, you know, if you want a long career and you got to be ready for that. And it's not easy in that maturity and work ethic and learning to prepare and learning concepts. I really believe that all comes from, you know, being part of a college basketball team. And even the 1 year, I don't accept, really love 1 year guys, but I think even 1 year helps them, you know, in their preparation for college. And I think NBA coaches would tell you that.
Bruce, I was looking at your resume and you know, your history as a young coach and some of the people that, some of the coaches that might have influenced you. You're at one of the great universities in the country, Kansas State. And, you know, if you go back several decades, one of the great coaches in America at that time was Tex Winters. Tell us about his legacy and what his legacy means to even you today, several coaches removed from him.
Well, I don't think people realize that. A lot of people don't realize, you know, they hear Tex Winters, they think of Phil Jackson, they think of Bulls, they think of the Lakers, but he was part of four Final Fours here at Kansas State. He was 2 as an assistant and 2 as a head coach. There was a great coach, and you know the name of Jack Gardner. Jack was here, and he was assistant. Tex was his assistant. They went to the Final Four. Jack ended up leaving and going to Utah, and Tex became the head coach. And you know, took Kansas State to two Final Fours, and you know, and then Tex moved on. He hit, I think, to Washington, and he ended up at Northwestern, Long Beach, and then went into the NBA and had, you know, part of, I think it's either 9 or 11 NBA championships as an assistant. And you know, my tree, my upbringing of coaching kind of is tied into that, because my mentor, my boss, the person I was with for 19 years, Gene Cady. Coach Cady played here at Kansas State, not basketball, but he played football. He was all Big Seven at that time. He ran track and played baseball, but he wanted to play basketball. And you know, that was when they were making the Final Four runs. They had Bob Boozer and really good players, Jack Parr, and Coach Cady wasn't good enough, but he became very close to Tex Winter. And, you know, when Coach Cady's knee blew out and when he was playing for the Steelers, he came back to Manhattan and said, I need a job to Coach Winter. Coach Winter got him a high school coaching job in Beloit, Kansas. And, you know, from there he went to Hutch, to Arkansas with Eddie Sutton, and then obviously Western Kentucky in the long, 25 years or so at Purdue. So, so there's some great tradition here. You also have Ron Kruger, that coached here at Kansas State. You have Cotton Fitzsimmons was here, and then the great Jack Hartman was here for 18 years as a coach and had an unbelievable run. So very proud of to be part of a really strong basketball coaching tradition here at Kansas State.
Well, you know, you talk about Gene Cady and, you know, the great years that he had at Purdue. And I know some of those years, the two young assistants on his staff were yourself and Matt Painter. I would have really enjoyed to have been a fly on the wall at some of those coaches' meetings when things weren't going well and Coach Cady addressing his assistants and tell them to get off their backside and let's get some players in here and let's get some toughness in here.
There's no doubt about that. We, you know, along with Matt, you know, Kevin Stallings, who had the long, you know, career at Vanderbilt and ended up at Pittsburgh, Illinois State. Kevin coached that. Steve Lavin was part of our staff. So Alan Major was actually a manager for us and ended up becoming the head coach at North Carolina Charlotte. And so we've had some pretty good people and, you know, part of Coach Katie's tree. But Coach was tough. There's no doubt about it. You know, when we had meetings, and the funny thing is, his decision, his opinion at the end always counted. But one thing I learned from him, he depended on his assistants. He always said 10 eyes are better than 2 eyes. He wanted us to have an opinion. He wanted us to talk, to help with the team and prepare. And I think it helped me become a better head coach because he allowed me to have a lot of responsibility. I you know, at that time, though, we only had, you know, 3 assistants and maybe a grad assistant. You know, now I got so many guys I'm not sure I know what to do with, but it's a little different. But I was very fortunate to be with Coach Cady, learned about basketball, about life, about dealing. I think the best thing he did as a coach was his motivation of the players. And he could get so much out of the guys. He was tough on them, but they loved him because he cared about them.
You mentioned your staff, and you got a lot of them now, and they all have different names, and it's kind of hard to tell who's doing what. But Gene Cady helped you. Matt Painter being around him helped you. I know he's younger than you, but he's doing a great job at Purdue right now. Bruce, don't you believe it's important now? And I think responsibility of head coaches like yourself to look at your staff and others outside your staff and try to help them and influence them so that the game of college basketball can grow.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And I've my platform for years, and I've talked to the NCAA, I've talked to the NABC, I've talked to the Big 12 administrators, our administrators. I don't think we help young coaches. I don't think, and we don't use the wisdom of the older coaches. And There's so many rules about what they can do. When I was a grad assistant, I did everything. I recruited. I coached on the court. I did study table. I helped with, you know, whatever it might be. So it helped me grow as an assistant. Now they have all these rules, and, you know, our director of basketball operations, he can't coach, but he does, you know, he might do the tickets and the camps and the travel. And then you got another coach that does the video and the prep, help with the video and preparation, but he can't be on the court and do the recruiting. So I think we have too many rules, and we've hurt ourselves with helping coaches get experience. And, you know, it's one of my fears, and I am getting up there. I'm, you know, as you said, 20 years of head coach. This is my 40th year in Division I basketball, and I love the game. It's been my life, and I want it to move forward. And you know, the other, you know, we don't allow, you know, I think with the rules, because your main guys have to be recruiters, you know, it would be nice to have an older coach that has wisdom. Tex Winter was the wisdom for Phil Jackson with the Bulls and the Lakers for all those years. And he used them. He used them for the knowledge and the help, you know, the basketball part. I watched the Bulls practice, and Tex, you know, he was, you know, obviously invented the triangle offense, but, you know, Tex was out there doing all the little things that helped Phil be successful.
You got your first head coaching job in 1998 at Southern Illinois. And then after a period of time there, you moved into being a full-time assistant and then the head coach. What was the hardest transition, most difficult transition from being assistant to being a head coach at the highest level?
Well, I think the biggest thing, you know, one, and, you know, I just kind of talked about, especially with young guys now, is to be able to deal with everything. You got to manage people. You got to know something about tickets. You got to know something about recruiting. You got to know something about, obviously, about the game of basketball, the coaching, you know, dealing with the players, with the parents, with the administrators, with the alumni. There's so many tasks. I always said, and you know, too, you were at the highest level. When you get out to a higher level, you are more of an ambassador for the university as much as you are as a coach. And you have so many responsibilities of dealing with the alumni and promoting the program. And, you know, I think Al McGuire told me when I was a young coach, he said, you do your better coaching when you're an assistant. When you become the head coach, you got to do so much else. You better have good assistants around you. And I really believe that's true. I think for myself, it was delegating responsibility, to get delegating authority, trusting your assistants. You know, I think that's always hard. And I still oversee everything, but, you know, you got to allow those guys freedom to grow as coaches. And if you don't, they're not going to be ready when they have their opportunity.
You know, even, you know, we mentioned my son Ryan at UMBC, and they had a miracle season last year. Didn't go as far as, you know, they wanted to go, but they went further than UMBC has been in a long time. And I know, as I looked at him in the off season and watched him try to juggle his professional life with his off time in the summer, if there's such a thing for a college coach, the only advice I gave him, I said, Ryan, you've got to learn to say no to some things. You just can't please everybody. Everybody wants a piece of you. And, you know, the bottom line is you got to be able to turn the page because there's another season waiting for you. And I think that's even true at Kansas State and other schools like you.
Yeah, there's no doubt. You know, we gave our guys 2 weeks off last spring after a nice Elite Eight run. And now you come back and you got to focus on the next season and get them ready. And, you know, so it's hard. And every, like you said, everyone wants a piece. So when I went to the national championship at Illinois and, you know, one of the, you know, it's one of the most populated states, you got Chicago. I mean, I could have went and did a speech or signed autographs every night of the week. And, you know, you want to take advantage of those opportunities. But at the same time, it's important to balance family. It's important to balance your players and stay attached to them. And otherwise, you're not going to be ready for the next season. And if your family's not happy, it makes it difficult for yourself, coming home at night. So it's a tough job. You know, it's probably 340 days a year, 345 days a year. Basketball's there. I laugh because my wife this morning, we got up early and she said, "What are you thinking about?" And I said, "Something." She goes, "No, you're thinking about basketball." And actually, at that moment, I wasn't. But most of the time, as a coach, you are thinking about basketball.
Big 12 is one of the great conferences in the country. It stretches geographically all the way from West Virginia down into Texas. I mean, the trips are long and hard, and the weather gets tough. And, you go in these crowded arenas, and there's a lot of intensity. Last year, the Big 12 got seven teams in the NCAA tournament. What makes your conference so competitive?
It's amazing. Not only seven in the NCAA, we had two in the NIT, and then our 10th team, Iowa State, they really, if they don't have some guys injured at the end, they're probably in the NIT also. So you could have had all 10 teams. It was the best I've ever been part of, and I was in the Big Ten for 25 years, and there were some pretty good years and pretty good teams. But I think we have great athletes. It's amazing. The recruiting balance, obviously the population, the East Coast, but we have the South is important, Texas and Florida, and basketball's really grown in those states. Through the years, which allows us to have good players. We have unbelievable coaches. You got Hall of Famers, from Bill Self to Bob Huggins to Lon Kruger and on down the line. Some amazing coaches. And then great tradition, as you've talked about, whether it's K-State or Kansas or Iowa State, you've got great tradition, great arenas and fan support. We've been the best. I think it's five out of the last 6 years. Number one RPI as a conference is the Big 12 has been there. And last year, definitely at an all-time high.
You've got, we talk about intense rivalries in college sports. You got Alabama and you got Auburn football. I mean, that's got to be one of the big ones. You got Duke and you got North Carolina basketball. I can go on and on, Southern Cal and UCLA. But maybe one of the most underrated, underappreciated rivalries in the country would be Kansas and Kansas State basketball. Do you agree? And if so, what makes that so special?
Well, it is amazing. We are about an hour apart or even less. And, the word hatred is a strong word, but there's not a lot of love, I promise you, between the two. And, I've been through Purdue and Indiana, which is, amazing rivalry for my 18 years at Purdue. If you think about Gene Cady versus Bob Knight, some unbelievable games and the rivalry was so intense at that time. Illinois, Iowa, Illinois, Michigan State, our team and Tom Izzo's, we had a pretty good rivalry going in that stretch. But I'm telling you, this has got to be in the top five or three in the country. And the noise, the excitement of the game, it's amazing. And Kansas has had the upper hand as of late, and yet our fans just come out and they're so into the game, whether it's at their place or at our place. And there's no doubt it's got to be one of the best rivalries and excitement for games that I've been part of, and it's got to be one of the best in the country.
As we get close to the end of the podcast, Bruce, I want to bring up something that I know is close to your heart and your wife's heart, Megan, who I know helps you with this. Kansas State, Bruce Weber, and your staff, one of the biggest contributors to Coaches versus Cancer in the country. Why is that such an important event for you? And, you know, what have you done to try to build up and help the fight against cancer?
Well, obviously, cancer affects everybody. And, you know, it's affected me when I was a young child. I lost my grandmother. This is, you know, 50 years ago or more. And at that time, they didn't know much about cancer. And I mean, we couldn't even go see her. They had her quarantined in the hospital. And, you know, they didn't know enough that, you know, were we going to catch cancer from her? But, you know, to my wife's mother passed away, you know, by through cancer. Uncles, cousins, I've lost two assistant coaches and dear friends to cancer. And so when I became a head coach, you know, Megan and I both made the commitment to help out Coaches versus Cancer. And our association has done an unbelievable job. We're very fortunate here because of Norm Stewart, who was one of the starters of Coaches versus Cancer. And when he was at Missouri and himself was battling cancer, and they started the 3-point shootout. But we get together with Missouri. We get together with Kansas, with Wichita, UMKC, Kareem Richardson, and of course, Coach Stewart. And we have one of the bigger fundraisers of the year. We had it in September. We try to do some little things here on campus to continually promote it and raise money because it, and you probably know the numbers better than me, but it's millions and millions of dollars that have been raised in the 26 years of Coaches versus Cancer. And it helps save lives and it affects people. You know, people always come up to me and say, oh, Coach, how are we going to be? You know, are we going to the Final Four? Do we have a 7-footer or whatever? But they also say, thank you for being involved in Coaches versus Cancer because it's affected me and you're helping it out in the research, the support, so many avenues that the American Cancer Society helps with that it makes a difference for a lot of people.
And finally, Bruce, as we get near the end of today's podcast, there's a lot of conversation in the country today about the landscape of college basketball. In my opinion, the game is in really good shape. There are cases out there where they need to be looked at, scrutinized, and handled. But my opinion is that 90% of the college coaches and the universities in the country are doing it right. I mean, they understand the NCAA rules, and they abide by them. The integrity of the game, I think, is very high. Maybe 10% of the people try to short-circuit things. But I think in all that the college game is in pretty good shape. How do you feel about that?
Well, I think, obviously, in all walks of life, whether it's business, politics, even religion, there's always some things that are wrong. And you know, we're not perfect, there's no doubt. But I guess I'm old-fashioned. I believe in I believe in college basketball. I believe in student-athletes. I believe that basketball does a lot of good, you know, for the players, obviously, to get an education, to give them opportunities. You know, I've witnessed it and been part of it for 40 years and had the good fortune of going back. I got inducted last week into Southern Illinois Hall of Fame and to see our former guys and to see where they're at and what they've done. And, you know, it just makes you feel good to have that opportunity. We've had 23 seniors since I've been at Kansas State, and all 23 have graduated. They still come back. They still care about the program. And you know, you feel good. It's fun to watch Darren Williams, or right now I got Rodney Magruder with the Heat, or Wesley Iwundu with the Magic, and see those guys playing the NBA. But it's also, to see guys get in the coaching field. Matt Painter, I recruited him. He was my assistant coach, and now he's being successful. There's Link Darner's at Green Bay, Konzo Martin's at Missouri. These are guys that all came through our program, and there's a lot of good in college basketball. And I hope some of the recent stuff doesn't taint people's opinion, and they keep coming back cheering and helping student athletes have success in their future.
Well, thanks, Bruce, for your time and also your insights this morning as we talk about college basketball. Good luck to you and your Wildcats this year in the ever-tough Big 12. And I thank our people for listening to our second podcast of this year. To learn more about the NABC, just visit nabc.com.